people need to realize that there's a difference between predictive AI and generative AI. Instead of just going for the generative AI, that's just going to inflate the problems you already have.
You're saying, hey, making a ton more shit is still making shit.
Yeah.
What I'm hoping is with predictive AI, we can start teaching all these bozos, if you actually make something that somebody wants to watch, they'll actually watch it.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
My friend, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell everyone who you are and where you're from, and then we'll get into it.
Sure. I'm Thomas Ramsey. I'm the CEO and founder of Neurons, which is an applied neuroscience company where we use neuroscience and AI to predict consumer behavior, basically.
Right. So for everyone who's not a genius who's listening to this, break that down a little further for us.
Sure. So basically means that when we're trying to predict how consumers are responding, so how, you know,
responding to ads,
yep, to websites, to any assets you have
to
along the consumer,
consuming
any part of the consumer journey, basically. Yep. So you could put a microphone in people's head and say, you know, how do you feel now and now and now, but that is a very poor predictor of what people actually will choose and how the market will respond. So that means there's this gap in our understanding, and that has been filled with neuroscience. So we have been for the past 10 years been able to show that there's an added value of using eye tracking, EEG, brain scanners, to basically measure emotional and cognitive responses and attention to those assets that are highly predictive of market effects. The problem with that is that it's not scalable. It's basically it's expensive. It takes time. It requires technological soundness, so to speak.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's just been reserved for just a few kind of Fortune 500 or 100 companies, basically. So what we have done is then during the past 5 years is to take AI or machine learning to say, can we actually use the vast database that we have built to create predictive models of the same thing? So now we can predict what people are going to pay attention to, and emotional and cognitive responses within seconds instead of weeks and months.
So let's break down a little bit further. So for the audience that's listening, your company is in the business of trying to really understand us consumers on the other side when we see a commercial, a banner ad, a website, a text, an email, a social media post. In plain English, how does one even go about doing that? When I hear brain scans, you know, I'm thinking about the audience that just heard that and like, what is this dude talking about? Like, you know, how does that even happen? Is this focus groups? Is this normal consumers? Are the people listening right now actually in this without realizing it, or is it more selective? Break down your journey a little bit.
Sure. So we started 10 years
actually,
ago.
Let's use a scenario. Let's make pretend I'm Reebok.
Yeah.
I'm Reebok. I call you and be like, hey, met you at the Vayner Expo at Cannes. Thought it was interesting. Let's have a meeting, right? Now we're at 2-3 weeks later. I canceled on you once because I'm Reebok, you know, and so I'm the one who's writing the check. So it's another 3 weeks. Now it's mid-August. We finally have our meeting.
Sure.
You know, if I'm really just new to this, if I'm like, hey, okay, I'm spending millions and millions of dollars on advertising, I'd like to get more information, better prediction. How do we go about doing that?
Yeah, sure. So I would actually take a step back to like 6-7 years ago. That conversation would be very different. We would contact you, would offer you to run a study to say, you know, we'll test your assets. It will take, you know, we'll test, you know, let's say 100 people in the US or your preferred market. Whatever segmentation, we would have to add people to cover different segments. Test how people respond with, you know, measurements, kind of hardware enabled eye tracking and EEG, to then measure how people actually respond.
So I would say, hey, I'm really focused on Asian men, 18 to 25.
Yeah.
And you would go out and find 100 Asian men, 18 to 25 across the US. Let's say if I said that was the region, and you would pay them or find them, and then they would come into some sort of environment.
Central location, yeah.
And so this is humans you would find and you would pay them, I assume, right?
Yeah.
To come in and put on this headwear, and the way their eyes would move and would they put on a helmet and like the brain scans and all that? Like, break that part down for me.
Yeah, so you would actually have eye tracking glasses either on or under the screen,
okay,
or connected to a phone, for example.
Makes sense.
So that means that you're measuring where people are looking.
That.
At the same time, the brain scans will actually, we have been working for many years. So my background is in neuroscience. I took a PhD in neuroscience and built these kind of metrics of how can we actually measure emotions and cognition in the brain.
Yep.
So that instead of using this kind of highly sophisticated sophisticated neuroscience paper, so to speak, but just build it down to metrics that you can that are meaningful, basically. So do people have a positive emotional response, negative emotional response? Do they understand what you're showing them? Or does it, you know, overload with information, for example? So even though that's a very kind of cumbersome approach, that will still have a lot of added value to these brands, to Reebok, for example. But it will still be time-consuming, high budget, and you know, it's still kind of sophistication level that you will have need to have to do this.
For the people at home, why do 100 people in a category that may have 4 million or 40 million, why is that significant enough?
You can, the best analogy is that if you walked into a movies, right? Let's say it's a horror movie. And instead of taking a seat, you would go to the very, you know, the picture itself, and you would actually observe people.
Yep.
Then you would see that everybody jumps in their seat when there's a jump scare. Some jump less, some jump more, right? But everybody's jumping. That's a very coherent and consistent behavior. So what we're doing is that we're identifying those consistent behaviors, and that's the measures that we're building, and then later on predicting as well.
Understood. So that's how it used to be done.
Yep.
And you're saying now with the advancements of artificial intelligence, what has happened? What makes it faster? What makes it easier?
So you can think of it this way. AI has, and machine learning has kind of two components. So one, you need to be able to create good models. The second is that you also need to have a very good data set. It needs to be up to date, right? So we've been spending the past decade just building that database. And machine learning is not actually a new thing for us. Yeah. As a neuroscientist, we've done this for 30 years, right?
At least.
So we identify this, that now we have enough data to start training those models. And we created like a 95% accurate model for predicting attention. This means that you could upload an image, get a prediction in 10 seconds, and that would be 95% accurate compared to if you did a test of 100 people in the US, for example.
I understand. So now, instead of doing all these focus groups, because you've been doing this for a long time, you have the data that as the machine learning gets stronger and stronger, or off of the first data set that you've had and the modeling that you've done, which is unique to you, we as advertisers can upload images and videos and get a better sense of, is there something there?
Yeah, exactly.
So what your technology has done is, in a lot of ways, I feel like I, for example, have built a fairly successful business career heavily on intuition of consumers and consumer behavior. I've been like very happy about that because I realized that was not something teachable.
Mm.
So for the first time, this is why I'm so fascinated by AI and ML, is that it's really fascinating that the black and white is coming to the gray, right? That was gray. People couldn't touch that. That was my competitive advantage. But what is inherently intuitive to me, or my own brain's pattern recognition of what will work on getting people excited or engaged, is now at a rapid pace becoming commoditized, right? I mean, I really genuinely believe that the skill sets of a musician who writes songs, or a producer or script writer for movies, or a marketer like myself, like some of this magic is potentially, or maybe even not potentially, is it's realistic that it's here, that some of that magic is being commoditized by these technologies, yes?
I would say yes and no, because on the other side, sometimes you would also see some of the problems we have currently, some of the inefficiencies we have will also get exacerbated with the boost of technology and AI, for example. So I'll give you an example.
Please.
So imagine, for example, you are now setting up, like, you want to do like 100 versions of the same asset, an ad, for example. Okay. So you use a generative AI model just to cram out 500,000 different versions. Now, based on the models that we currently have, they're basically trained on whatever's out there, right? We know that when we have done, you know, eye tracking testing, and then the AI model already has learned this, is that 50% of all ads are presenting the brand in the bottom right corner.
Yep.
4% maximum are paying attention to that brand.
Yep.
So that means that there's a huge loss if you're doing brand building for that ad. That means that about half of all ads will actually miss the target if brand building is part of the purpose of the ad.
I got good news for you. I don't need your AI tools. 99% of the ads are missing. You know, because there's also, you know, to your point, you're just talking about the creative variable.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that fascinates me is everybody in this town for this whole week assumes that the ads are being seen.
Mm.
before you even get into the part of the creative fucking it up,
yeah.
there's the ads are being run and people aren't seeing them.
No.
And there's an incredible, is there a way that you can build an AI bot that can instill common sense into anybody here this week, please? Because the level of common sense that's been completely and utterly eliminated from the ad world is fascinating. One of the excitements I have about AI is actually putting black and white around magic. Even though it's been this huge competitive advantage for me, the truth is, I think when you're great, you can adjust to new realities. So I'm not scared of anything. Number two, it's just like, it's so scary out here this week to me, like the amount of conversations I'm going to have that are about math or subjective opinions that has nothing to do with common sense around consumer behavior is devastating.
Yeah, I agree. I see. It's like two things to do that. One is that you need to train people. That's one thing. Inspiring people. You know, fortunately, the thing is that people love hearing about the brain, especially their own brain. But
of course.
So there's certain things you can kind of sneak in that way.
Yeah.
So people can learn. I think the other thing is, to your point, commoditizing this solution.
Yeah.
You know, AI neuroscience sounds extremely difficult, right?
Yeah.
So our kind of biggest challenge is actually making this available where people are doing the design. So that means that if you're a performance marketer, if you're a designer, for example, a brand designer or an ad designer, this means that you need to be able to access those tools in a meaningful way that is meaningful to you and helpful to you at the time that you're using it. If that's a Figma plugin, if that's an Adobe plugin, that's, you know, commoditizing it for you, so to speak. So it should actually be below the radar
and
instead
teaching
people.
And do
you
view your technology as like an Intel inside? Like it's integrated into products more so than a front-facing, using the analogy you just
Definitely.
Used?
Definitely. So our approach is kind of API first. That means that we want to be on the platform where people are using it instead of forcing people to come to our platform.
And then once you get as much API scale as possible and it's strong, then you can start charging more for it once it's an integral part of the product.
Yeah.
Like we're seeing more and more of. Makes sense. Parting words, anything we didn't touch on that you want to make sure the audience hears?
No, I think that the most important thing is that, you know, people need to realize that there's a difference between predictive AI and generative AI. I think that's kind of the big thing here is that people, instead of just going for the generative AI, that's just going to inflate the problems you already have if you don't solve the kind of the baseline.
Right. So for everyone who's listening, the generative AI, you're saying, hey, making a ton more shit is still making shit.
Yeah.
If you understand the predictive nature of it, it may tell you where to go or, more importantly, what to make.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think that there's a potential cost of bad ads for the brand. So it means that if you put a ton of shit out there and people are responding negatively to that, they're overloaded with information, it has a negative brand value
for
you.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. That's my overall argument, period.
Yeah.
My overall argument, period, in this world that I've entered 14 years ago was, you're doing nothing good for us. I always think consumer first, not what I'm trying to sell. Like, you interrupting me with a pop-up ad when I'm like on my mobile device and I can't like exit out because it's so small and I clicked it, and back home you're like, hey, we got a click. But in reality, not all impressions and awareness are equal.
No.
You know, everyone's like, you know, I need brand awareness. I'm like, well, Hitler had 100% brand awareness. Everybody on earth knows who Hitler is. That's not good.
No.
It's not like that was like, you don't need to, you know, just because people know, like this concept of all publicity is good publicity is like a laughable concept. If everyone hates you, everyone hates you. And I would say that most people hate ads. Like, there's nothing good about them. Like, why on earth do I want to watch you? And especially this town, this week, is going to continue. Here we are in 2023. And luckily for you, AI is the flavor of the year. Just like, you know, NFTs were last year. There's always a flavor. But let there be no confusion for anybody at home. All the people from around the world that came to this fancy place in France this week, they're going to be talking about TV commercials still. Television commercials. The ones that nobody actually watches. Not a fucking person. None. All that disrupt you from what you're watching, which is why streaming services have come to dominate. Nobody wants to watch that commercial. Nobody wants it. And it's unfortunate because they could. If you go back to the 60s and 70s, people actually did look forward to the breaks between their shows because people were making more creative ads at the time. They were, you know, it was just better. Like, the ads now suck. Like, they really do suck. Like, the Marlboro Man was kind of cool. And like, you know, like those Saturday morning cartoons of like cereal, they were cool. Like, people used to make good ads. Like, where's the beef? Today, ads are just so fucking boring because the talent in the ad world is not that creative. Like, you know, sorry to say it, but like the creative people are doing it for themselves on their own social media, going to Hollywood. Like, you know, like Don Draper's dead.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think, you know, we just have to get there as an industry to understand. And that's why I agree. Like, I love that you said that. I'm really glad. I know we're going a little over here, but such a good point. Everyone in Adland is like, yay, I'm going to be able to make a lot more stuff with the generative stuff. It's great. But if it's more bad stuff, that's how we got here. The last 20 years of bad stuff. Banner ads are bad. Nobody listening right now would even contemplate clicking a banner ad. But it didn't have to be that way. They could have been good. They could have been high value. Right? It's why we're back to scanning QR codes. Nobody scanned QR codes because the first 100,000 QR codes that hit the US, because it was happening in South Korea where it was actually having some traction. But in the US, the first 100,000 QR code campaigns was a link to a commercial. The ad world fucked it up. And now the QR codes give you the menu, and now the QR codes get you to like a game. Now as humans, notice what I just did. Everybody, when I just said, will you click a banner ad, said no. Everyone listening, I promise you, I get it. I like, yes, I'm sure someone's in their car right now. Carl's like, oh, I click them. Yeah, okay, because you wanted to buy something that you had looked at before, but you're not compelled. As a QR code, though, I think a lot of people right now will agree with me, pre-COVID, you never would scan one. But again, now I bet you anyone listening right now is like, well, I'd consider it. Mm. It's not like you're always doing it, but there's utility behind it. There's something of value. Mm. To your point, what I'm hoping is with predictive AI, we can start teaching all these bozos that like, if you actually make something that somebody wants to watch, they'll actually watch it.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to get back to. And that's what, to your point, that's what I leave it here with. If we get serious about predictive, it can actually educate people on how to make better stuff. If we get too focused on generative, which we will, because we love more. I'm a quantity guy too, but I like quantity of quality.
Yeah.
Like I want to post on social media as much as possible, but I want it to be something you actually want to watch or look with. So anyway, thank you, my friend. One more time for everybody who might be interested for an internship or to work with you or do a little more homework. Where should they go? Spell it out.
Easiest is to go to neuronsync.com.
Spell that out for me.
So neuronsync.com. Mm-hmm. Or you go to neurons at LinkedIn.
I love it. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much.